This is The Rock.
Bill Wiley.
Welcome to Newsmakers. Dallas Green passed away recently, and former Major Leaguer Jeff Kent and New York Daily News baseball writer Bill Madden has some heartfelt things to say about the former baseball manager. Here's what they had to say. Enjoy the podcast. On the phone, I have, in my opinion, the best second baseman of all time in all of baseball. His name is Jeff Kent. He's best known with the Giants. But Jeff Kent also played for the Mets under Dallas Green, and Dallas Green passed away recently. I have Jeff on the phone now. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Jeff, Dallas Green was the first big league manager to believe in Jeff Kent. You started to put up good numbers under Dallas Green. Tell me what it was like to play for Dallas Green.
You know, my first experience of Dallas, I didn't know who Dallas was before he became the manager of the Mets. I was a pretty ignorant baseball player, but my first impression of Dallas was special in a sense that he came in and brought law and order to the clubhouse, to a group of players that was known to be, you know, the worst team money could buy. When I got traded over to them from '92, Dallas took the place of Jeff Torborg. Mm-hmm. And he came in. He was super tall. We had this the ceilings in the clubhouse were very short, not very tall. So Dallas came in. He had his uniform on. He called a team meeting first day he got there. Had a team meeting. Dallas had his 1980s spikes on. I'm telling you, these were old school Adidas spikes that I don't even know if it fit him because his feet were so big in these shoes. He was walking around the clubhouse and he had this yellow professional, binder of paper, you know, the line binder paper. Anyway, he had about 6 or 7 pages of notes. And he walked around that clubhouse for about an hour, hour and a half, and just wore us out. And that was the first time I had ever seen him, met him. He didn't even come and introduce himself. It wasn't a nice guy. He came in and laid down the law. And that was pretty impressive to me for him to do that, because we were kind of a dysfunctional team down in the clubhouse. We had a lot of great players. But we were not running on all cylinders at all. And he came in and laid the law down. And he came in as a very strong, very confident, very knowledgeable figure in the game. And that was my impression of him. And he had a deep voice, big man, big head, big heart, big shoulders. He had big everything. You know, one thing that I'll never forget, and I teach my kids now when I coach, is he could not stop saying, you play with your head and heart, head and heart. You play with your head and you play with your heart. He could not stop saying that.
No kidding.
And that's something that really stuck to me about the game of baseball. And, you know, I came from Toronto. I was a young player, got with the Mets, still hadn't been able to solidify myself, but Dallas Green, I think, was the first manager that got to understand me and believe in me. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, me buying into, you know, his philosophy in baseball, which I thought was a good and impressive start for me in the game of baseball.
What was the biggest thing you learned from him as far as on the field or even off the field that you carried over the rest of your career, which was, in my opinion, a Hall of Fame career?
Well, thank you for that. And you know, Dallas also preached no excuses. That was, you know, the two things that I'll never, ever forget. Head and heart, to play with your head and your heart. And then no excuses, which was he didn't want you to go out onto the field and then make an error and then, blame the field or drop a fly ball. And, well, you blame the sun. He wanted you, if their sun was out, you better wear your sunglasses. If the and one thing I never forget is baseball players in the big leagues, they don't take infield anymore. Mm-hmm. Dallas Green took infield every single day. Now, he didn't care if you were a starter, a veteran player, a rookie kid, you were taking infield every day. And the reasons behind that was he didn't want any excuses for you to be lazy or make an error or your arm was sore or whatever it was. He wanted you to take batting practice. He wanted you to take infield, and he wanted you to prepare yourself every single day. So when you walk out on the field, if you sucked that day, it was because you just flat out sucked. It was because you left nothing behind. No, you know, you didn't get enough sleep. You didn't eat right. You know, your arm was sore, whatever it may be. No excuses was something that, you know, carried over, and then something I'll never forget.
Jeff, I noticed you mentioned this earlier that when you first met him, he didn't mince words. And I'm wondering why that didn't turn you off. I mean, you know, most people today, anyway, would be turned off by that. Why it did not turn you off?
Well, when I got to the Mets, I started from in Toronto, and I went from AA to the big leagues without playing AAA. And I got to the big leagues, and I was Cito Gasson was the manager there. And he was kind of a pretty, he had a lot of clout as well. He was a pretty quiet guy, and when he spoke, he listened. He chewed me out a couple times, as well as a bunch of other players that I witnessed. And he was kind of a guy that it got me prepared for a guy like Dallas Green. And I thought that that's how managers acted in the big leagues. I thought they were totally professional. Their word was the law. You didn't deviate from that, and they had all this knowledge in the game that I wanted to absorb. I mean, I was a guy that came in. I was grabbing onto things everywhere. Teammates would give me comments or advice. I would grab onto it. Coaches would do the same thing. But guys that were leaders of clubs, like Cito and especially Dallas Green, he spoke with such authority and with such confidence and knowledge in the game that when he said something, you know, I took it as law. Well, that must be the way. That's going to make me better. You could tell in his tone that it wasn't an arrogance, it wasn't a cockiness, but it was more of a cared. I mean, he came in to coach the Mets. He was there to do a job. He was there to clean up the mess that we had created as players. And I thought he was the guy. And if he was there to clean it up, I was going to follow. And it was easy for me to follow a guy like that who had a personality, such a big personality like Dallas Green.
Wow. He always had good things to say about you. And how did that help you along the way?
Probably the most influential was comments that I know about in the reasons why I got to the San Francisco Giants and my career took off. And something I'll never forget was Ned Colletti, general manager of the Dodgers, when I was with the Dodgers, but he was assistant with the Giants. Ned Colletti had mentioned to me, after the fact that Brian Sabian, who was the general manager of the Giants at the time, called Dallas Green and asked Dallas about me because they were fixing to trade for me and Jose Vizcaino, and they were going to trade Matt Williams, one of their most popular players, and they wanted to know about me and how I performed in New York. And Dallas Green said, well, if you want a guy that's going to hug everybody and get along with everybody in clubhouse, he's not your guy. But if you want a guy that's going to go out there and bust his ass and win ball games every day, he's your guy. Mm-hmm. And that nailed me to a T, because that's kind of how I've always lived my life. Is I play baseball. I'm not there to make friends and socialize and go out with the team and do all that. I'm there to win ball games and do what I need to do to win games. And he read me to a T, and because of that comment Ned Colletti mentioned to me, I was the guy that they were looking for. You know, it wasn't a problem in the clubhouse, but I was a guy that was going to win ball games, and the Giants needed to win. And that was an easy move for them by taking the advice of Dallas to go ahead and get me.
What do you want, and this is my final question, what do you want people to know about Dallas Green that hasn't been said before?
Oh, geez, I I'm not a big fan of the game itself, so I don't know what has been said about Dallas, but I bet you just about everything has been said about him. But, you know, from the Phillies to the Cubs to the Mets as a manager of mine, he may have had a big influential and maybe even an overwhelming personality because of who he was and where he came from. But when I was traded to the Indians from the Mets. The general manager called me up in his office, and I didn't know what was going on. And I got into the office, and Dallas Green was sitting on the couch. And the general manager of the Mets at the time was, I believe it was Hunsicker, told me, you know, we just traded you to the Indians. And instead of asking the general manager or looking at the general manager for a question that I had in my mind, like, why? Basically, that's the first thing in your mind as a player when you get traded is why. I didn't even say why. I just looked at Dallas Green, and he didn't even say anything. He just looked at me dumbfounded. And I actually told my kid this yesterday because of the Dallas Green's passing. He just looked at me dumbfounded, like, and I read it. This is what I read it as. I read it as, I can't believe we just traded you. Mm-hmm. And because he didn't really have any control of it, I don't believe. And that showed me the impression from him, just physically in his eyes, that I could see that he liked me, he appreciated me, and he knew that I was destined to do better things. And I could read all that in his eyes. And the reason why I say that is because he did have a personal side to him that he cared about players. He may have chewed their butts out. He may have stuck in that big old 15-size foot he may have had up people's rear ends all the time. But I tell you, he cared. And he cared about me as a young player, not as a – I mean, he didn't treat me any different because I wasn't a veteran. But he cared about the progress of me as a player. And I bet you he had that amongst a lot of other players too. And that's something I really appreciated because, you know, him being so big and loud and overwhelming, he still had a soft side to him.
No doubt about it. Jeff Kent, it's a joke you're not in the Hall of Fame, but that's for another story. That's for another day. But I want to thank you for helping us pay a tribute to Dallas Green, and thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for your time. And, boy, the baseball world's going to miss Dallas.
No question. Take care. When I was growing up, my all-time favorite writer was a guy by the name of Bill Madden, who wrote for the New York Daily News. He covered the Yankees for many, many years. He's back with the Daily News now as a freelancer, and I have him on the phone right now. Dallas, thank you. Bill, thank you so much for being with me.
My pleasure, Bill.
Bill, the reason I'm asking you on the show is because Dallas Green passed away this week, and my first question to you is, what did you like about Dallas Green?
Well, first of all, I have to say Dallas Green was a very special person to me. He was one of my heroes, and I was fortunate enough to have him as a manager for both New York teams. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, neither one of them were very good. Right. And Dallas didn't have a whole lot of success in New York like he did in Philadelphia when he won literally whipped and spanked the Phillies to the World Championship in 1980.
Right.
But Dallas was, first of all, he was fearsome. He was loud. He was intimidating. And he was also one of the really good-hearted people I've ever known at baseball. Mm-hmm. And he was also very frank and honest, which is rare for managers in particular, because they're always trying to cover up something. Mm-hmm. That was never the case with Dallas. And, you know, he was just a great person to be around. Mm-hmm. And I can say this, that Dallas would give you stuff, which, as you know, Bill, as a reporter, that's what we hope for, and managers, players, whatever. You'd go into their office or you'd get them alone at their locker or whatever, and they'd give you stuff instead of just pap. And that was one of the great traits of Dallas that I not only admired, but I really appreciated.
Now, you talked about his honesty and everything. Do you think he could manage today if he was still alive?
Probably not. I think Dallas would have a hard time managing today with the modern-day ball players. Granted, they were making a lot of money back when he did manage, but they're making even more money now. And they don't take too kindly to Dallas types. And you can see what's going on in baseball now. But most of the managers coming into the game now are into the analytics and all this other stuff that has nothing to do with players' personalities and makeup. Mm-hmm. And Dallas was into makeup. Dallas was into what you what you, how you carried yourself in the clubhouse and how you carried yourself on the field. And he had a low tolerance for players who were lackadaisical or didn't seem to care. And unfortunately, I think there's a lot of that in baseball today. And for that reason, for Dallas anyway, there's not enough Larry Bullers around today and Ryan Sandbergs, who are the kind of players that were his kind of players.
Right. I got to ask you this. Obviously, he had the talent in Philly. But, you know, that team failed to go to the World Series before he got there. All of a sudden, he takes over, and they're the champs. What changed?
Well, what changed was attitude. Danny Ozark was a very low-key manager there. He had a very laid-back persona, and I think he kind of lost control of the team. They kind of were out of control there and not really paying attention to the fundamentals of the game and the things he needs to win. Dallas came in there, and he started kicking butt from the moment he got there, and he tolerated nothing, and the players hated him. They couldn't stand the fact that he was beating them over the head, and it was only until after they won and years later they realized how much they really appreciated it because of what he brought to the table in comparison to what Ozark had been doing as the manager. And like I said before, Dallas literally whipped their butts to the World Championship that year.
What I remember, too, was that he benched quite a few of those veterans for kids. Those kids were Lonnie Smith, Keith Moreland, Marty Bystrom. I mean, that was unbelievable, and he didn't care.
No, he didn't. I mean, like I said, Dallas was the kind of guy, it didn't take him long to size up a ball player. Mm-hmm. And he knew the guys that were playing with a passion and the guys that weren't. Mm-hmm. And the guys that weren't didn't play for him very long.
Right, that's true. You know, people forget, Bill, that he was a good front office guy when he's with the Cubs, and he helped turn them around. I mean,
well, I think you're absolutely right. I think that may have been Dallas's greatest accomplishment, even though the Cubs didn't make it to the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
He made some of the, I mean, his stewardship over the Cubs. He turned this forlorn franchise, woe-begotten franchise, into a championship-contending team, and he did it with good scouting and player development. His player development guy there was a guy named Gordon Goldsberry, and he was his right-hand man. He died young, and Dallas said at the time that that was a huge loss for him when Gordy died young. But mm-hmm. Gordon Goldsberry was in charge of the drafts that delivered Mark Grace, Rafael Palmeiro, Jody Davis, Jamie Moyer, Greg Maddux.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. I mean, these are the guys that they had the best farm system in baseball once Gordon Goldsberry and Dallas took control of that team. And then Dallas made some great trades there. He acquired Rick Sutcliffe. He acquired Dennis Eckersley and Gary Maddux and the big one that year was my mind is slipping me now, but he got the right fielder that year, and you'll have to
Keith Moreland.
You have to help me out here.
Keith Moreland,
yeah.
Yeah.
All of these guys he got in trades, and he, like I said, he took a team that had nothing, and between the farm system and the drafts and the trades, all of which were masterful, he turned that team around. I think it was one of the greatest front office jobs of any executive in baseball history.
Bill, you talked about his time with the Mets and Yankees. They weren't very good. But yet, he had a great relationship with the New York media. How do you explain that?
Well, I think the New York media appreciated Dallas's frankness. You know, he didn't beat up on us like Billy Martin was known to do on occasion. But he was tough, and he was, you know, he would jump you if he thought you were asking a dumb question or if it was a question that he didn't appreciate. But he never held any grudges, and he never, you know, once he jumped you, it was over. And mm-hmm. so I think the New York media appreciated that, and I think he appreciated us. I mean, I always felt like Dallas was one guy who really liked us. He liked being around the writers. Mm-hmm. He liked shooting the breeze in his office with the writers, talking baseball. You don't have that anymore.
Right, right. That's true. You obviously talked to him after his granddaughter passed away. Could you tell me, obviously he was devastated. Could you talk about what it was like talking to him after the tragedy?
Yeah, that was a horrible day. I was able to get Dallas on his cell phone. He was in the airport. I think he was in Denver on his way to. He'd been down at the islands at Casa de Cabo. What I can't pronounce the name of the island mm-hmm. where he had a house down there when he got the news, and he had to fly out to Phoenix to get there. And I think he was changing planes in Denver, and I got him on the cell phone. And it was a Dallas Green that I had never experienced. He was crying on the phone. He was just absolutely devastated, as you can well imagine. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know much what to say to him, but, you know, it was so Dallas that he took the time to not only take my call, but to basically bear his grief with me on the phone while he was about in the process of changing planes to get to Phoenix. So, that was probably one of the toughest interviews. It wasn't very long, but it was probably one of the toughest interviews I ever had to do. But, you know, obviously we needed to talk to him. And then the other thing was when he got to spring training, about a week later, a couple weeks later, I can't remember the time frame, but it wasn't long after, he took the time to have his own press conference in spring training to really let it all out with the writers. And I thought that was just extraordinary.
Wow.
He was there. I can still see him standing there in the back of the Phillies Carpenter Field complex there, or not Carpenter Field, whatever it's called now. Anyway, their minor league complex, and he was standing in one of the backfields, and he had his dark glasses on, so you couldn't see what was underneath them, which was red, bloodshot eyes, and he was still in mourning and grief. And once again, he bore his soul for the writers there, and it was
an extraordinary
thing to see.
Wow. Before I let you go, Bill, what's the one thing that stands out regarding Dallas Green? Because obviously the tributes were amazing from what I read.
I think the one thing that stands out for me, first of all, he was a bigger-than-life guy. But I think his emotion stands out for me, whether it was just railing about players' lack of effort, or bearing his soul in grief, talking about his granddaughter. The wide spectrum of emotions that he had, and I would say that he was probably, in that respect, he was one of the most emotional people I've ever known, mm-hmm. because of the fact that whether it was his temper or his just basic grief and sadness over his granddaughter.
Right.
That's what I think of when I think of Dallas Green. He was a bigger than life guy with bigger than life emotion.
Wow. Wow. Bill Madden, listen, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you so much for telling my fans about Dallas Green. And it's good to have you back on the scene, and you take care of yourself.
Well, thanks a lot, Bill. Dallas was a great human being, and I hope as sad as we are that he's gone these past few days, I think a lot of people who didn't know him now have gotten to know him and what a great guy he was.
No question about it. Bill Madden, thank you so much.
Okay, Bill, my pleasure. Take care, pal.
You too.